Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, as well as their fabulous Writers Conference, which just concluded this past weekend. It was fabulous, as always. To learn more about this organization, please go to PNWA.org. Well, today's guest, Helen Cardona, is a very multi-talented woman. She wears many hats. She speaks many languages. Today we're going to talk about writing, but she's, in addition to being a successful poet, the author of two poetry collections and having been published in literary journals, really too numerous to mention, she is also a successful actress, go figure. She's appeared in Mumford, in Chocolate, in A Good Year, in Law and Order, Enough, The Bold, The Beautiful, Pan Am, Chuck, Nikita, Final, Stealing Roses, and Final. And she's going to be in Spycosis, opposite Tom Arnold and Jamie Lee Curtis soon. Wow. But, like I said, she's a poetess, and a good one at that. And her most recent collection is called Dreaming My Animal Selves, which I really enjoyed. And I'm going to do something different today, just a little bit different. I'm going to start, before we actually meet Helen, I'm going to read just a brief snippet from a poem of hers that I really liked from this collection called From the Heart with Grace. And in this poem, the narrator says that she's discovered that in dreaming lies the healing of earth. In dreaming, we travel to a place where all is forgiven. In dreaming is the divine created. It's just beautiful. It's also true. Let's talk to the author and see what she thinks. Helen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure, Helen. Well, I just love this collection of poems because it deals with, among other things, dreaming and dreams, obviously. And it deals with the sort of what I think of as the reality of dreams. Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And is that, in your own life, is that something that resonates with you? Do you see a different kind of reality within dreams that is just as meaningful to you as the reality of the table in front of me right now, for instance?
Absolutely. The way I look at it is it's all a dream. And there's the dreams at night, and then there's the waking dream when we wake up from those dreams and we live. But it's a whole and a dream. And so, we live in a duality, you know, a world with light and darkness and masculine and feminine and good and evil. Like, everything is dual. And in dreaming, we are connected to oneness. You know, we are connected to the divine. And so we have access to that through our dreams. We have access to the, what Jung called the subconscious, the universal subconscious, where lie all the answers. So what defines my writing is the sacred dimension of the poetic experience. And so it is founded in reality, and it reconciles both the spiritual and what you would call carnal of what's materialized, how we are materialized on this earth. And the reason I love dreams is the rational mind is no longer in charge, and you can look at, you know. And so you're given a key, you know, to everything, to problems. I mean, not everything that necessarily you want to know, but what you're meant to. And so they're a huge wealth of information and are very healing. I would consider myself a healer also in that way. As an artist first, because art is a form of healing. And then because you can try and find out how to mend, you know, certain pieces of your life by looking at the answers that the dreams give. And some of them are so magical, you know, some are upsetting. And they want to be heard, basically. And some are just like fairy tales. And so I love all of it.
You know, I always think of the upsetting dreams as my true consciousness. I mean, we call it our subconsciousness, but I think of it as my real consciousness saying, here is this feeling again. Don't you know this feeling well? Isn't it familiar to you? This is the sort of this certain fears of feelings. If it's a dream that has anxiety in it, or my sense of guilt maybe, or anything fear related, it's like my subconscious saying, look how familiar this is. Do you really need this in your life? Is this necessary? Look at it in the starkness of dream reality and see it for what, and feel it again and remember. To me, it's how you don't need it. See how you're living. Does that make sense?
But that's different. That's different dreams. Like first, there's the ones that you can have just because. Let's say you ate too much, or there's just a rehash of what happened and like that, and they're just you know what's going on and that's that. But the others where there's a fear, an element of fear, let's say, and the ultimate expression of that is the nightmare. But let's say where it can take several forms. But let's say you're pursued by a wild animal that scares you. And what the dream wants you to do is to face your fears, basically, and to realize there's nothing fearful there, right?
Exactly.
So instead of running away from what it is that's scaring you in the dream, you can rework the dream by, that's how I play with a dream, how I work and, study the dream is enacting all the characters in the dreams. They're all part of you. And so you face what it is, whether it's a person attacking you or an animal, whatever it is, you just face it and listen to what it is it, he or she has to tell you that you need to hear, that they had to go to that extent to be heard by you, basically.
That's right. No, we've said the same thing in two ways, I think, because it seems to summon for me. Look at this. Look at it. Look at that feeling now. Don't just be... You know, it's funny. I used to be a waiter for years, and it was... And every waiter who's ever worked in the service industry has the waiter dream, where... This crescendo of chaos, where the toffee can't be brought and the food isn't coming and the people are piling in. I would get them. They're awful. And I got to the point, Helen, and I don't know if you've ever done this. I can remember distinctly. I had this dream where I was in this – I was waiting tables in the restaurant. It was the usual thing. The people are coming in and piling in and piling in and piling in. It's awful. It's awful. And all of a sudden, I said to everybody in the restaurant, everyone, listen, this is a dream. None of you are real. I'm so sorry, but I can't help you all. And then I looked up and realized the restaurant was in a mall, and I left the restaurant and returned to the dream. I did, and then I was just dreaming again. I forgot that I said that to the mall. I guess that's lucid dreaming, isn't it?
That's sort of lucid dreaming when you can control your dream, absolutely.
Yeah. So you said something interesting that went by rather quickly, but I'd love to get into, is you said that art, and I, by the way, I agree with you completely, but you said that art is healing. Now, a lot of people say, what are you talking about? Art's entertainment. Healers heal. Artists entertain. But you say, no, it's actually
both.
Healing. It can
be
both.
It can be
okay.
Both. Absolutely.
How is it healing?
I mean, I look at it this way, because one doesn't choose to be an artist. It's a calling, and so this is something that one is called to do, that you're basically fulfilling, your life, who it is you're meant to be in this lifetime, through your artistry, whether it is to be a painter, a sculptor, a writer, an actor, any form of art. And it's something that basically some people are aware, or you know, it's almost an unconscious process up to the point that it does become conscious what it is you're doing. But basically, it is a way of expressing yourself that is a transcendence. You know, so for me, it is to transcend pain, you know, and transmute it into love and beauty, let's say. So whatever traumatic events, whatever painful events, you just find a way to express them that you acknowledge whatever it is that, you know, whatever darkness you experience, and you come out of it, you know. And so I'm always looking for the light, and and I think every artist does that in one way or another. And then there is, you know, art as just sheer entertainment, and yet it has value too, because to make people laugh is very healing as well.
Yeah, it is. It is indeed. And you know, it's funny. I write these daily essays. They're kind of essays, stories. To me, I feel like they're poems, but they're not in verse, so I have to call them essays. they feel like poems to me. I realized that shortly after I started them, that I deal with them like a poem, because they're one idea contained. And I realized that the only thing I'm saying ever in them is, be not afraid. That's all I say again and again and again and again and again, in one way or another, is to, what I think of as, dispel the illusion of fear. And I think art really can do that. I turned to art when I was young. I didn't have religion, or I was raised outside of a religious family, but I did have art, and that's what I turned to deal with the question of fear. I turned
right
to music, I turned to poems, I turned to books.
Yeah, for me, it's really, you know, the language of the ineffable, you know, what's impossible to express, but you still find a way to write it, the mystery. And it's akin to shamanism, where, you know, in the native traditions, the shaman has some kind of death experience and comes back from the other side with the knowledge of healing, and
right.
it's a bit similar with the artist. You know, we do travel to the outer limits. You know,
You know, what's funny, though, is that writers, not poets so much, but for sure fiction writers, and it really doesn't matter what you're writing, it's all the same, often are such meat and potatoes people in a lot of ways. They feel like they're just storytellers, are trying to make a living, blah, blah, blah. But they all have to deal with this. When they start talking, they sound like shaman, and they don't want to. You're listening, you're receiving, you're losing track of time, you enter this dream. It's all the language. Or traveling sort of outside of their physical experience to receive the poem, story, whatever.
That's right. We are storytellers, and we need myths to tell our stories. And absolutely, yeah.
You know, as I mentioned in your intro, Helen, in addition to being a poet, you're also an actor. And I've done a lot of different artistic fields. I write music, and I did acting when I was younger, and now I'm doing mostly writing plus this. But I've always felt within the arts that, when I started composing, it really helped my writing, my language writing. And I felt the crossover between acting and writing was very easy for me. Obviously, they're different disciplines, but do you feel a crossover between the two experiences, both of which you practice at a pretty high level?
They're informed. They all inform one another, I think, and nourish one another. For me, you know, we all have this wound, I think, growing up, you know, this aspect of ourselves, which in terms of astrology, you know, is symbolized by the archetype Chiron, the wounded healer, this part of ourselves that just didn't have a voice, and it's the part that we heal within ourselves and through which we can heal others. And so for me, it wasn't easy growing up establishing or even identifying myself as an artist. I was able to do that through music. I was a pianist early on, you know. I started playing the piano when I was five. 1996. I graduated from the Music Conservatory in Geneva with a second prize and went on to study with a master in Salle Pleyel, Paris. But I was also a math major, very good at science. And so my family really pushed me. Yeah. But, you know, it all works together in the brain. The math, the math, the music, and the languages. And that's how I met Sidney Pollack when he was doing the movie The Interpreter, and he interviewed me about that. He wanted to, I used to work as an interpreter, and he picked my brains and basically used my life to create the character that Nicole Kidman played. He made her a Sorbonne linguist, a musician. But because of the way I grew up, and even though my parents were intellectuals and, you know, artistically minded, the French system is such that if you have an affinity for math, the selection is through math, and they push you to just, you know, focus on that. So I was a math major at 14. I got into med school at 17. And so the even though I was writing poetry since I was 10, the desire to act was repressed. You know, it wasn't something that was done. You know, my family was in a way conservative, even though they were very liberal-minded.
Yeah.
It was very strange. So I had to come into my own. It was a very painful adolescence in a way. And it was very important that I learn who I am. And in a way, I was able to do that by moving to the United States and starting all over and going to drama school there. And that was very empowering to finally own my voice and not be all compartmentalized, that you can have a scientific mind and you can be spiritual and you can be an artist as an actor and as a writer. And study dreams and this country is wonderful because you're the sum of your parts. You know, you're not just one thing or another. So to answer your question, one of my first coaches, Sandra Seacat, whom I met through the Actors Studio, is the one who introduced me to the dream work. And she and that process of tapping into your dreams to mold characters was just very creative, and later now, you know, I've been using it to also create poems.
Right. Have you ever had a poem? This has happened to me a couple times where things have come to me in dreams, you know, like stanzas essentially, and I've been able to use them, not quite verbatim, but pretty close. Has that ever happened to you?
I know. I mean, isn't that the ultimate gift when this comes to you?
You're like, well, that was easy. Thank you.
Oh, you just wake up so happy when something like that comes to you. Yeah.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I love this story you just told about that mix of liberalism and conservatism, of course, and the conservatism comes with your survival. That's probably what they were worried about more than anything else. How would you pay the bills?
Of course, they meant well.
Of course, they always do. We don't care that our children are happy. They just let them live longer than us. That's all we want. But but I love that story, Helen, because, and here's why, you had to really find for yourself that your authentic expression was the only goal, that you had to find for yourself, give it to yourself that your voice mattered. You weren't going to get it from your parents, although I'm sure they would have liked to have given it to you. You weren't going to get it from them. You had to go get it yourself, which means you will be able to help teach other people how to do that. You know?
Absolutely. For me,
you know
it was... Sorry?
Because you know the value of it in a way.
The value.
Whenever we have to learn something, we really know the value of it. Whatever we just get easily, it's hard to remember why it's so valuable sometimes.
It was, let me tell you, it was just a matter of life and death. It just came to that, and that's when you know what it is you need to do, basically. And we're all, you know, the same on the one hand, and yet we're also all a bit different with different needs. And some people are able to compromise, you know. For me, my soul, my body didn't let me, basically. It was just, you know, it was just a matter of survival, basically. So I've been very grateful to this opportunity I've had to start over. And and then integrate what it was that I learned in Europe as well. Now I can look at it also as a gift, you know, the academic knowledge that I acquired there. But basically, it was definitely a matter of survival. Yeah, you just
but you know,
I think you have a path, and you have to honor it.
But what is the most beautiful story in the world than that of the person becoming themselves? You know, one of my favorite people I've gotten to interview is a woman named Deb Colletti, who's told a story often about how she was in an abusive marriage, and the husband said to her, you know, he basically tried to silence her. She was starting to get a writing career going, and although she had received physical abuse, it was him trying to silence her, saying this writing thing's never going to work, that got her out of the marriage. And it's a great story, but the quote she used was from Nietzsche that she used to, was her guiding light, and it was, become who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Become who you are. And that's what you had to do. And you can bring that to your, that process of becoming who you are. You must bring that to your work on for sure in the acting, because stories are always about people becoming who they're meant to be. And of course, in the poetry too.
Yes, absolutely. And other people only have the power that you give them ultimately.
Yes.
So, yes.
It's true. Say that again. What do people have the power? What power do they have? No, it's true. This is a small thing, but it's huge.
They only have the power that you give them.
That's
so
right.
It's really up to you, and it's very important to know who you are. Yeah.
Right. No one can take anything from you that you don't give them.
That's right. Mhm. That's right.
Oh, it's so important. So, you know, as I said earlier, I was thinking about this. We're beautiful. You know, I really did love that quote, and I did think it was beautiful. And, of course, you're an actress. I'm sure people have told you you're beautiful. Maybe they haven't. I hope they have. And and it's a funny word, isn't it, that it could be applied both to somebody's physical appearance and a collection of words. What does that mean to you when you hear that word?
Well, you know, It's very strange. It's very hard to see yourself. So that for me, I feel like I'm a complete chameleon in terms of being able to inhabit so many different characters and to change, you know, physically, even according to who the character is. Like if you look at my body of work and the movies and TV shows I've done, I look so different in each of them. And it doesn't take much. It really, really doesn't take much. Just a little bit of the hair is slightly different, the clothes or, and so I'm that type of actor who transforms, you know, into the characters. It's all from within, obviously, but I think the outer world is a reflection of who we are, you know, of our inner world, basically. So what you create is a reflection of who you are as well.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny thing about appearance. I was thinking about it just the other day, my own appearance, and I don't understand it because I spend my life looking out of my face, not at it. You know, I don't my own physical appearance. I'm not even aware of what it is. I have no idea what it is in a way most of the time, because I'm only staring out of my eyes, and the mirror
the mirror
you don't walk around with a mirror, and when you do look in a mirror, all you see is you looking at yourself, what you look like when you look at yourself. You don't see what you look like. Well, of course, you've seen yourself on camera. That must be weird. But
that's totally different. That's you know, from a professional perspective. But let me tell you, in order to answer your question, it's really an interesting question that you asked, because of the way I grew up. You know, I grew up with a brother, and we basically I grew up like a tomboy. And so my mother raised us exactly the same, and I didn't have dolls or anything like that. I had books, I had dogs, and nature. I grew up in the mountains, you know, outside of Geneva. Even I was born in Paris, we moved there right away. So I had that kind of childhood. And then in terms of my teenage years, they were spent in a high school specialized in math and science. So I was with nerds, basically. And nobody was paying attention.
I believe you.
to what anybody looked, because all that mattered were grades. And so everybody was just, you know, wanting to do well or better than. It was very competitive. It was very difficult. It was very stressful. But at the same time, it was all about knowledge and solving equations and whatnot, you know. So that's how I grew up. I didn't wear makeup in my teenage years. I mean, I was in med school in 17. I got out of med school at 19 with, because I had a breakdown. Basically, I was not where I was meant to be. I mean, I returned to medicine through shamanism and healing in a different way, you know, through the arts as well. But basically, I didn't grow up the way maybe girls grow up now, where, you know, there's such a focus on looks and such. I had no idea. My mother never told me that I was attractive. So that's something that's always been like a funny thing for me. I can see that it's there on the one hand. On the other hand, it's just like almost something that I appreciate. I live my life according to certain principles, and I'm very healthy. And, I've always played sports, and I do yoga, and I basically don't abuse my body or myself. So I have this health, I think, healthy glow, if you want to call it. But I'm not, you know, I'm not like, for me, what mattered always because of the way I grew up was the mind. So the fact that I went into a profession where you really have to use your body, you know, and you working on certain characters, you can approach them through, let's say, an animal, the way you walk or so I'm very much into my body also because of sports and such. But this physicality and this obsession, you know, on looks, it's something that for me is almost foreign. Like, you know, I of course have to use pictures to promote myself and such, and so I do take pictures, but it's never been like, you know, it's just I just work in such a different way, you know.
Oh, well, it's just fascinating, and it's probably going to keep you sane, I have to say, because to become obsessed with the appearance is so misleading anyway. Because I think about whenever I look at actors and actresses who have so much, seems to be, there's so much emphasis put on their appearance often if they're that kind of leading woman or leading man. And so much of what we think of as good looks has to do with what's going on behind the eyes. You know, I remember I saw Barbara Streisand talking about Robert Redford, who was a pretty good looking man, you know, probably still is. I haven't seen. And she said it was what was going on behind those eyes of his that was so interesting that made you want to keep looking at it.
Of course, that's exactly, absolutely. It's also the intelligence and what goes on, because just a plasticity is going to do nothing for anyone, really, I believe, you know, or for 5 minutes. It's just like you need to have, the body, the face has to be inhabited. And so you read the person in the eyes. Everything that's going on is in the eyes, the empathy, the intelligence, the everything, the humor. So it's how the body is inhabited. Absolutely. And that's what shines through mostly.
You know what I was thinking of? I get the, you ever read Eckhart Tolle?
Oh, of course. Yes.
I thought you might have. And he said, you take care of the inside and the outside takes care of itself. And I'll tell you, it has never, that little reminder has never not served me well, and I'm sure it's true of you.
It's so true. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Helen, I just heard a little bird in my ear telling me our time is up. Thank you so much.
It's flown by. Thank you.
It certainly has, boy. Well, so again, the book is Dreaming My Animal Selves by Helen Cardona. If you're bilingual, it's in English and French. I didn't even get to mention that, so you can read it in both languages. Helen, thank you so much. Best of luck with this and all your multitude of projects.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And to all of you listeners, you know, do you hear that? This is a woman who was being funneled into science, which is fine, but into medicine. She didn't want to do it. She had to go find herself. And there her success lay. Go find yourself and you will find success, whatever that means. I guarantee you, you really can't go wrong when that is your aim. So let today, if it isn't already, begin the journey into who you are and who you've always been. And until next week, this is Milton Hour. Go do what you love. Go be with you. Go love what you love.